Good evening. Welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast. It's a podcast about little people, what are plastic, and the stuff we like to do with them. Joining me this evening is Rachel. Hello, Rachel.
Hello. How do we know it's evening? Where the listeners are?
I'm glad somebody else has brought this up, because I think we really need to address this.
And who else
this.
Is this then? Questioning my timekeeping. Is that Dines?
Yeah, it's Tom Dines. Yeah, I just think we need to preemptively apologise for everybody listening to this in the morning.
No, I like to set the tone. So if you're on your drive into work, as I frequently am listening to podcasts, the late night hour comes on and you start to think about... What?
Yeah, just, all right, if you're in the morning or in the afternoon, officially, screw you. You have to listen
just
to the evening podcast.
Chill out.
Sultry tones. I mean,
stop driving to work and go to sleep.
Yeah. That's what
you
want.
That's what we're telling
you. 4 in 8 hours.
Pull over.
You can do this.
You're feeling very sleepy. This is a special sleepy time episode of Tiny Plastic People.
Tiny Plastic People's warm bath.
I mean... It's also just proving, because I'm frequently mentioned on the pod, is that I'm quite basic. I can't actually exist outside of the time that I'm currently experiencing. So
I think that's true of most people.
Probably. Maybe.
It's a national vibe. Know.
Anyway, shall we start? How have we been doing?
Okay.
Rachel, have you painted or played any games recently? Painted any games?
I have.
Painted any models?
So I have been enjoying the new Warcry. It's very good. They managed to not break it, and at the same time also make it slightly better. I have been painting all of the terrain. I am just finishing it, and hopefully we'll be able to varnish it this evening, which is exciting. Unfortunately, that means I then need to figure out how to store and possibly even transport it, which is going to be difficult because these trees, they are very big.
Mm. They're quite handsy, aren't they?
Yes, literally.
Big grabbers.
Uh-huh. And they have all these bits that stick out, and they're just,
So they kind of...
A storage nightmare.
A bit
stickle brick together then into just like one mass, which...
That's sort of what I'm worried will happen if I put them in a box together.
Mm. They're a bit like the seed pods, right? They just grab onto everything.
Yeah.
So have you actually played the new Warcry then?
Yeah. So on the day it came out, got a couple of three-player games in. So the core rulebook still has additional rules for doing like 3 and 4 player games, which are quite fun. Mm-hmm. Genuinely a very fun way to play the game. And so that was our way of getting used to the new rules, which are, there's just a few changes and a few additions. There's like this new reaction system that's like a really light touch, but actually adds quite a lot of depth.
Is this officially Warcry 2 then?
Yes.
Did they summarise the changes anyway? Because so the reactions is quite a big thing, but are there any like any small changes like to orderings of things that might crop up and be important?
Some of the small changes, some of them are just like FAQs that they've brought, or updates that they've brought back into the sort of core rules. And then some of them are stuff like if you are a flying model, you cannot carry treasure while you're flying. And
okay, that makes sense.
Like treasure, if you're carrying treasure, that means you have a movement penalty as well. There's some other things as well. Most importantly, when you're standing next to the edge of a ledge and you take damage, then you have a chance to fall. Whereas previously, you only had a chance to fall if somebody got a crit on you. So... you're a little bit more likely to like knock your enemies off of the edge of things, which is exciting, even if
it
still
have to sort of,
happens quite rarely.
So now you have to sort of hedge on the ledge edge.
Precisely.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite a fun change.
Yeah, there's just like, there's these little changes that add up to quite a lot of extra fun. Yeah, it's good. And then I've also done the first game in the campaign for my Warrens of Hashit, which are one of the new warbands. And they all, well, nearly all of them died. And then one of the two that survived went off into the jungle to explore afterwards and got eaten by a beast. So, an auspicious start.
Did you get any permadeaths? Or just like seriously?
Two permadeaths. One died in battle, and one was the one who went off and got eaten by a monster in the jungle. Well, so I was able to hire a new recruit to replace the first one that died. But yeah, so I'm going into game two with a fighter down.
Well, that's quite fun. It's good that they give you resources to buy a replacement at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of get a certain amount of glory, which is what you spend on hiring new fighters, among other things, just for showing up. So you can probably, it's quite difficult to fall. You have to be super unlucky to fall like super far behind. And there's also, you get like bonuses for going up against enemy warbands that are like more experienced and better equipped than you
are. Right, yes.
Yeah. Mm. A bit of a catch up mechanic.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, apart from that. What have I been doing? Working on my game. Very, very time consuming, but just getting there. I'll shut up about that. That's me. What have you been up to, Dines?
Oh, me. So it's been a while. I've successfully harpooned and dragged aboard my white whale. Which was the Skullvein Manse, the War Scryer Citadel.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, I slayed that beast. It turns out it was way easier than I thought because I got it for an absolute steal.
Is that the one with the pretty nice telescope on top of a castle?
Yep. The big old rickety house, big tall thing. So I immediately just broke it up and tore it to pieces and put it in a box. I pinky promise that I will strip the paint off it and rebuild it. It was put together like moderately well, like not too well, but okay. But I'm going to repaint it because it was a bit dingy.
Is it one of those terrain kits from that era where all of the terrain kits were kind of not super well designed and also not particularly well produced, so they were kind of like difficult to put together and
outsourced.
Because I put
definitely
together
outsourced.
I put together the Numinous Oculum recently.
Yep.
And fuck that.
Had a time. had a hell of a time doing that. Yeah. There's the Witch Fate Tour, Death Knell Watch. They're all the outsourced ones. I got a couple of Baleful Realm Gates. And yeah, man, it's just. They take a lot of work to get to go together. It's funny, isn't it? Because I know, Rich, you got one of the watchtowers, right? I don't know. Did you have to assemble that?
No, I got that pre-assembled.
You got that built. So there was a period of the old Warhammer terrain that I banged on about before. That was, I'm pretty certain, that was done by GW in Nottingham or whatever. Because that, it goes together much better. It just feels like a normal kit.
Yeah.
Whereas the Baleful Realm Gates came in like... Do you know when you buy like a toy matchbox car and it comes in the blister pack and like inside it's supported by a bit of like plastic? There's like got molded recess where the car sits to hold it at a cool angle in the box. The terrain is like that. Ooh. It's like in one of those weird molded plastic things, like already off the sprue.
Weird.
And it's just a bit weird. And yeah, it really suffers for quality. Yeah, and the War Scrolls itself, is it completely like that? A little bit. It's not too bad. It's not as bad as, I don't think, Numinous Oculum era stuff, but it's not the best. I think it'd make it work, basically. A little bit of application of green stuff and what have you, I think it'd be okay. So it's not too bad, but it is a little jank. I'm kind of going to stick some bits on it, see what I can do to AOSify it a little bit. It's extremely scully.
Well, that's doing most of the work for you, then.
Yeah, but so it's pretty good. So I got that. And like I said, I got, I got the, to look over what the hell it's called. Nope, don't know. Big Kale Shrine with these like two spiked pillars.
Oh, God,
sort of eye of Horus, but it's not that. It's just a generic chaos thing in the middle. Again, got one of those brand new. That was really nice. Very big and very, very bad to paint. You'll be sick. That was £14. Brand new. Bargain. Absolute bargain.
You have the eBay luck.
I know. It's funny, isn't it? But yeah, £14. And then, but that's a really nice kit. But the problem is it's got really vertical sides, which makes it a bit of a pain to do anything with playing wise. So I think I'm going to, umming and ahhing and doing is buying some platforms, maybe from, who are the guys who make the cog for?
Dark Fantastic Mills.
Yeah, Dark Fantastic Mills do it in like a nice like platforms set.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to like build up the platforms around the outside as if it's a sort of like reverse excavation.
Ah, right, yes.
To sort of allow it, give it sort of like a, like stepped sides with these platforms to actually make it somewhat usable.
Yeah, this is what I was going to say is I'm not a old terrain buff and I also missed them all first time around because I was out of the hobby. So, only experience of them is seeing them at Warhammer World and they're all universally awful to play on.
That is true. Some of them, I think, like the Warscry Citadel, you have to take an executive judgment. You know what? This is a terrain piece. You can be next to it or you can be in it. You cannot be on it. It does not make any sense.
Yeah.
Is the Oculum the one that's got the kind of open, I don't know how you describe it. It's like a kind of cage.
There's like a cage on the side and you can stick your wizard in there.
I think what I normally do is I then catch that and I launch my models across the table using it like a catapult.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ping them off the corner. Yeah, so it doesn't really work. But I think what I might do is put all of these things on big bases and then have them as, you know, so that you can be on the terrain whilst not being literally on the terrain.
Yeah.
I think it gains a little bit of usability that way.
And limits the catapulting.
It limits the catapult. Well, yeah, it means you don't have to put them literally inside it to do anything. And I don't know. So that's okay. But that's nice. What else? I painted up some old cultists, which I'll come on to later. But yeah, that's me. What about you, Drew? What have you been up to?
Lots of heresy stuff. I'm trying to think if I've done anything but heresy. I have. I finished painting a bust recently, which I've been working on for months and months and months.
It's come out so well, though.
Thank you.
Which one is it?
Silly.
C-I-L-I. Oh, the bust. Yeah. Oh, man. Crazy. Crazy good.
And that was working with Sergio Calvo, who is a Patreon, available on Patreon, as it were, as a painting tutor. So I was...
Oh, I didn't realise that. So you were sort of like going back and forth with feedback, didn't we?
Yeah.
Getting feedback. Oh, wow.
So there's a reason why it looks better than it would do if it was just me on my own. I've had someone.
Hey, well, it was, you did do the hard work on it, so
yeah. Sergio Calvo was just like, tighten up the graphics, and you were like, okay,
yeah, explaining to me. I've actually got a painting course out in Madrid in October.
Wow,
with him.
That's
I kind of worked on the logic that all the painting courses I used to go to were organised by people up in Hull, and then that guy emigrated to France, so there aren't any northern painting courses anymore. So actually travelling to London is probably about the same cost as travelling to Spain.
It's an easy jet flight.
Sadly not. Not to go to doom it, but I have to do a transfer, so it's like 5 hours of flying to get to Madrid where I am.
Are you doing for one day or
it's
you go
full
you
weekend,
stay?
So.
Oh, cool.
I think I'd rather be in Spain than London, personally.
Yeah. And nice. Yeah, I don't know. I don't do painting courses very often. I started to get into them and then COVID happened and I lost a load through cancellations.
I've never done one. I'm curious what it's like.
I think it's very dependent on the level of the, not just the tutor, but also the people around you.
Right.
Because, I mean,
you're probably always going to find people better than worse than you in anything you go to. And I think the worry is you go and you're the worst person there, as it were, because then you're not going to, the class is going to move so quickly.
All the other kids point and laugh at you.
Yeah. Like I've said.
Well, what do you get told to do? Like, is it like, okay, class, now paint the face? Or like, how does it, or are you working on different things and the person comes around like, okay, work a little bit on this, work a little bit on that, goes on to the next break.
Speak for the ones I've done. They tend to be there's a miniature provided, and the miniature is usually selected to be interesting to paint, as it were. You know, like a lot of different textures, a lot of different, you know, angles, materials, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's something they're going to work on. And then you seem to get a mix of painting classes that are people teaching you to do their style, where you can generally tell that because you get like the end of class photos where everyone's painted the same model the same way, or you get the sort of more involved ones where it's like they teach you the theory and then you do what you want based on that theory, and then they'll advise, you know, within that.
They sort of like, do they sort of like wander around critiquing your implementation?
Yeah, and then sort of presenting things. Like the main one I did before sort of lockdown was it was with Banshee, who is Alfonso something, again another Spanish painter, but Banshee's his like I don't want to say stage name, whatever you'd call username. And yeah, with us, he like divided the room into half and it was just like, well, your theme is you're going to paint this model in warm colors and the other half are going to do it in cold colors. And that was, you know, it enforced some variation. But then within that, you know, it was the entire process of studying references and building up a basic palette and then, you know, taking it forward and things. And that was very much color focused. It wasn't very much direct brush technique, except that, you know, he would come around and sort of show you things.
Did you have to like find your own references? Sorry, I'm being assaulted by about 12 spiders that just appeared from the ceiling. Did they did you have to find your own references, or were you able to
we provided some?
Was it gang look at the screen whilst we Google these things, or you
a bit of both? Stuff? But yeah, certainly, you know, for your own piece you're working on, it was look at your own stuff. So yeah, I don't know what this October course is going to be like. Interesting, I hope.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Yeah,
quite a big step to go abroad to go to a painting thing. So
it is. Yeah, I feel like. I mean, it's a whole class as well. I know certain people do private tuition, and I do keep thinking. I know Roman Lepat does private courses, and he's a sort of painter I really rate. And I've no idea what they cost, but the idea of doing just a weekend with Roman would be amazing.
One-on-one
tuition. I mean, you have to just learn so much.
It'd be very awkward if you paid for a weekend of somebody's time and it turns out you hated them on like a personal level.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, hopefully they're all good teachers. That's the other thing is like, you know, they make their lives teaching, so they're not just going to rail on you for your choices. But apart from that, I've been doing heresy stuff, painting lots of heresy things. And haven't really played any. Oh, I did play a game. I played a game the other week. I played a couple of games of Necromunda, which is exciting because I love Necromunda. Oh, cool. I never get to play it. So hopefully going to start a Necromunda campaign relatively locally.
Oh, very nice. How many people are you interested?
Well, I'm not doing the organising. Actually, the person organising is other pod regular, Tom G.
Cool.
Organising it all. So I think it's about six of us. Six, five, can't remember, I'm counting myself. A decent crowd. Yeah. And I think Necro is a lot better as a campaign because, like Rachel was saying, it's like when you fall off things and your people die permanently, it's that extra element of sort of game where, you know, your actions have consequences and maybe you aren't going to be quite so gung ho and stuff with your
it's more of a story.
Yes, exactly. So yes, that was interesting.
Yeah, nice. I forgot to mention I played one game of Warhammer. Is that true? No, probably a couple of games of Warhammer 40,000 since the most recent one I played was I enjoy it. I always enjoy to smash hams with pals, but I think we were operating on somewhat different power levels. I got tabled in, I think, fully 80% of my army was dead in turn one.
Okay.
We'll just roll this out, but I don't think we need to do the second part of turn two. Let's just see what happens. It's good to smash hammers, but it did. It was a bit of a stark reminder of how that.
Sometimes I think
operating at different power levels.
Yeah, sometimes I think they should just design the game to be over in one round.
just compare lists. It's like top trumps. The person with the better strats.
I mean,
wins.
My club going experience was very much that. That you just rocked up and you were like, "Well, is it worth me getting my models out?" Yeah.
Well, I think the thing is, I've played other games of 40k, but they tend to be they've been with people who have played or you know, part of our role models Discord community, and have quite a specific, like, I don't know how to describe it, like game approach.
Yeah.
And as such, they have not been like that. And so I play, you know, like so other pod attendee like JD, I've played against Rich. And those are games which go on a bit longer.
Because you're both trying to lose at all costs.
Yeah, we're both desperately trying to lose at all costs and just fluffing, taking stupid mistakes, forgetting stratagems. And they're not very optimal ways to play, but they do result in somewhat longer games. I'm more used to that that attitude, I suppose. But it's like I say, it's always fun to smash hams and just be reminded completely how much I don't understand the rules of 40k. It was good to put tiny men down.
Fair enough. Talking about tiny men, specifically your tiny men, Tom, shall we move on to topics? And you were talking about, is it repainting old models, but not specifically other people's old models, your own?
Yeah. So I had this, I've had this discussion with a few people before of like, oh, well, you know, we kind of joke like, well, you know, I've got taken to a stage of, well, fuck it, that'll do. Right, close enough. Mostly finished. And I do that a lot with a lot of minis. Like, I paint them. I'm like, yeah, I think that's done. And then the next day, I sit down at my desk. I'm like, oh, I forgot the pipe. But you know what? I don't really care. I'm just going to leave it. It's done. I can't be asked to work on it because I've not enjoyed it. And I'm just going to leave it. And I'm sure I'll do it in the future. And then I obviously literally never do. Or like, oh, I forgot to highlight half of the model. Guess that's never getting done. And for the first time, for some reason, I pushed through that, and it's actually prior to that game I was talking about. I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a pass over all my old Chaos Space Marines and just redo the edge highlights, repaint a couple of panels where I, you know, put too much gold. So they're Black Legion, and occasionally I'd sort of like, when I was doing the gold originally, I was doing it in Gehenna gold. Took three passes of all the trim in this horrible gold. I'm like, why am I doing this? And sometimes the gold is patchy and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go redo it. I'm just going to go over some of them, do a little highlight the gold in the same color that I've done the most recent ones I spent a lot more effort doing, highlight the silver, you know, patch up the gold where I'd done it differently, and it'd just be like that. And I'd always imagined that I'd hate that task. But actually, I really enjoyed it. And it was really nice to put them next to the new ones and say, oh, actually, that final pass of highlights and stuff has actually really tied them all together.
Sort of modernized them.
And the bases, just like redo the bases a little bit, like just another highlight, just, you know, maybe stick a tuft on or whatever. And like, well, it's actually just sort of like, it's just a little elevation. So that actually just really ties all of these together. And they still don't look as good as my latest ones, but they don't. They no longer stand at sort of like sit there quite dull like they used to. I wasn't very good at doing. Well, I didn't used to do much contrast on them. I mean, physical contrast. You know what I mean? Literal color contrast, not the paint.
Small C
contrast. Yeah, small C contrast.
GW.
So I'd go back and do that, and thanks, G Dubs. And I just
can't believe GW copyrighted the word contrast.
I can't believe that they did this, and yet here we are, and it's confusing everything. But yeah, it just made everything tie together, and I sort of continued doing it. I went back over like most of my cultists, and got halfway through them because they've got quite a lot, not as many as James, but quite a few. And yeah, it's just, I'm quite enjoying it actually. And considering how much people joke about not ever doing it or enjoying doing it, I wondered, is it something you guys do? Have you, what, does it make you recoil in horror? Do you like do it often? Would you recommend it?
I'm 100% for it. I think.
Do you do it? Do you practice what you preach?
Occasionally, not very often. Like normally I'm too focused on painting the unpainted things to like go back and,
Well, yeah, that was my normal state of being, yeah.
But, like, sometimes it's just, like, I want to make the bases consistent across a certain group of models, because, like, when I did the first ones, I had a different kind of, like, idea in mind for what the bases were going to be like. Or yeah, it's just, like, I could make the gold a bit better or something like that. Or even, like, I definitely have like on my list of things to do is to actually strip or paint over some of the models that I painted when I first got into the hobby and like 4 years ago or whatever, whenever, however long it was. Cause I'm just like, I want to get them out and play with them, but they look really like, I just wouldn't enjoy it because they don't look very good to me.
would you definitely strip them all the way back?
I don't know if I'd strip. I don't know if I'd strip them. I'd probably just paint over them because the paint isn't that thick on them. It'd be fine. Yeah.
Are they in the right? Roughly the right? Are these your storm cast you're talking about?
No, this is like a bunch of like really old wood elves and old Bretonian archers that for some reason I had. And when I was getting it, I was like, well, I've got this to paint, so I'll paint it. But I didn't know what a wash was. In fact, one of the Bretonian archers was where I learned what a wash was and applied it, and it looks markedly better than the other ones.
So there's a gradient even within the models that you'd repaint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think it would be really cool to go back and do that again. I think like something that makes it easier for me is that like you're like, we're all seem to be like more or less okay with like acquiring somebody else's old models and stripping them and painting them and like sort of undoing the work of random eBay person 999. And I think it's totally fine to take the same approach to your own work, because past you is also a different person from present you in many ways.
I think it's overcoming a lot more attachment if you do it to your own things. Not to say it's not valid, but I think like personally it'd be a lot more of a big deal if I stripped something that I'd done, because I have a visceral knowledge of the effort that went into
it. But also like touching it up or repainting it is also like another way to get more enjoyment out of that miniature. And that for me probably weighs out any that I might any sort of sense of attachment or whatever that I might have to the current way that it's painted or whatever. Because if I don't like the current way that it's painted, then I'm not really getting much joy out of it, right?
I guess that it probably is going to depend on a whole bunch of factors, right? Because I have some old miniatures which are painted 10, 11, maybe 12 years ago, and they are okay actually. Like I'm pretty happy with how they're painted. They're a bit chipped, but for the time I did them, I don't know why, they're much better than I would have remembered them being. And those I don't think I would want to repaint, even though I feel like I could redo them and I could probably redo them better. I quite like them as they are, as a snapshot of where I was. And similarly, I've got a model I painted when I was about 7, and there's no point in me stripping and repainting that, because again it's a snapshot. But versus something, I suppose it is different if you have a model that you, it's a bit like with the cultists and the chaos marines I was talking about, like I want to use those, and I remember I only painted them like 3 or 4 years ago. I painted them at the time to be played and to look coherent, and if they no longer meet that, then I feel like it's not a disservice to previous me to go, well, because like I feel like previous me at that time would have painted them as I'm doing it now if I had known what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I suppose it depends. It's really going to depend on what the model is, what you wanted it for, what what it represents in its current painted state.
Yeah, I think if the model like represents some kind of sentimental or nostalgic thing, or it's just like a connection to a child version of yourself, like I can totally understand not wanting to keep it as kind of a memento, but also like all the stuff that I painted when I was very little is just complete dog shit. So honestly,
I suppose the other thing is you're under no obligation to keep all of it, right? Like, like I don't think I would. I sold most of the stuff I had when that I painted when I was 8. It's just gone.
Yeah.
I don't know what I did with it. I either binned it or sold it off. But I've kept one old Eldar Guardian, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't need ten shitly painted Eldar Guardians, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
One is fine as a nice memento. The rest can literally go in the bin.
Yeah. I think this is the thing, is that like it's so easy to become sort of, this sounds probably a bit too deep or whatever for a Tiny Plastic People podcast, but I think it's very easy to become kind of indebted to your past self, and I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
I think that's a very valid point. What about you, Drew? Have you do you repaint, touch up things?
I feel like this is like a trap for me, because I periodically get wronged for my attitude when it comes to the hobby, and I don't know. I mean, yes, that's the short answer is yes, I definitely do. The longer answer is maybe I shouldn't. I've certainly done what you've done and sat down with my Ultramarines, which are like my first army I painted when I returned to the hobby, and I think it was for like an Armies on Parade. I just went through and I re-highlighted and tidied them all up. But that was quite a long time ago. And nowadays, I'm far more likely to be like, I hate this thing. And I've got an airbrush, which is like a gun for destroying old paint jobs. And you can just blast primer.
So you can just take them out back and airbrush them in the back of the head.
I mean, I've even got models that I've just reprimed, and I've never done anything with them, but it's obliterated what has gone before.
Do you strip them first, or do you just execute them with the airbrush
only? I mean, I'm very lazy, and I hate stripping things. So,
you repainted some. You posted in our Discord that you repainted some models recently, didn't you? Was that paint over?
And it was even weirder, because it was the Galvor back for the Word Bearers in Horus Heresy. So they're like gribbly demons bursting out of Space Marines, and they're kind of weird models in just a, you know, in a model sense. They're very weird. They're kind of very confused. They're very busy. And the idea I'd got for them was I was going to do all my demons in a very kind of classic Hellfire style. So there's these Space Marines with like demon bits bursting out, and all the demon bits therefore were going to be in sort of burning magma style, you know, hot metal, whatever you want to call it.
So the demon bits are on fire.
And then the regular bits are normal Wordbearer Marines. And I'd actually got to the stage of putting transfers onto them when I decided I hated them. And then I came back to them, and I just blasted over them with the airbrush, but I only blasted over the demon parts. So I did my best to keep the legs and things that had the transfers on, and even the shoulder pads that had transfers on un-reprimed. So they ended up as totally reprimed in part and then fully painted.
So did you repaint these in order to do a new thing with them, or was it what you were doing before wasn't working and you
it was just
start it? Or did the change, or did the theme change?
I kept exactly the same. I just de-shat them, basically. Or attempted to de-shat them.
Yeah. Do you think maybe you would have done like a test model, and that would have helped you avoid like the mistake you made? Like maybe you did already do a test model. It's
No, I didn't. What I did was I painted Zadu Lyak, who's the kind of boss of the demon freaky people. He's got a big burning staff. And I painted that. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. I really like this staff I painted. It looks really good. I'm sure I'll be able to turn, you know, to replicate this.
make a whole theme out of this.
And the answer was, no, I can't. And it was also particularly stupid because it's like, I've got a heresy event in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, and these models should be finished for then, and they're not going to be because I've been repainting them. And so will other things not be finished because I'm a cursed person who just hates stuff.
Do you keep any old models from many years ago?
I do. Weirdly, actually, talking about, you know, my first models are Dwarf Nautiluses for Man of War. Shout out to Man of War fans everywhere.
Both of you out there.
And they're quite good. And then there's some stuff I painted when I was at uni, so like a real grown-up person, and they're shit. So I somehow got worse painting. I mean, they're not good, they're not dwarf nautiluses, but you know, they're a little dwarf submarine the size of the end of my little finger, and they have like Czech painted on them and stuff, you know.
What the hell? Why?
But I am nice. Tempted to take one and repaint one, strip it and repaint it, and
be nice maybe next to one that you did from that time.
I think of it. Oh, another thought is that maybe I should do it for Golden Demon and do a little Dwarf Nautilus diorama for Golden Demon.
Maybe fighting.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, because the thing is, the Man of War ships don't have bottoms, they're perfectly flat on the underside. You'd have to sculpt the bottom, and then I could put another one of my Man of War ships on the surface and build like a resin block. Anyway,
what?
Jeez! First you paint a bust, and now you want to sculpt a bottom.
Yeah.
Where does it end? Very...
What kind of guy are you, Drew? Are you a bust guy or a boat bottom guy?
I'm totally a boat bottom. I mean, everyone knows I love my boats, and the bottoms of boats.
What?
Bottoms is.
I mean, to make it worse, my old life was as a naval architect, and one of the dividing lines on the bottom of boats is called buttock lines, so
swab the poop deck and splice the buttock line. But it's a nautical term.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well that's quite interesting.
So yeah, the short answer was yes, I repaint, except my ultramarines who now live in a drawer and I can't bear to look at them. They're my hideous, ugly freak children.
Well, maybe one day you will give them the love they deserve.
Yeah.
Or take them out into the field and airbrush them in the back of their head.
Well, actually, that's the thing. The last role models meetup, I almost took my ultramarines to it because I wanted just to play an easy army. I've never got to use the new ultramarine in the new marine codexes or anything. Even in 8th edition, I was like, oh, I'll break them out, built myself up, packed them all away, and then got COVID. So they never got to see the table again. And then they went back into their drawer.
I missed that one too. It was rough. They didn't have COVID, but yeah, just the sensation of waking up on the morning I was supposed to be going and just feeling like crap and being like, oh, well, I guess I'm not going then.
Rest in pepperoni.
Yep.
Well, thanks for your inputs on that. I think even talking about that has made me realise why I do it for some and not for others. Maybe that'll make me more liable to do it for
others. Yeah, I mean, I feel it's
probably not, but maybe
BBC-esque fair representation because we're all kind of pro it. But
We need to get. I know that Peter Fienia is very strongly against like ever going back to anything you've painted before, which I think is extreme.
I think I would have kind of held that position. I think I would have, my previous position was, I think it's just completely fine to never do it because who can be asked? Being anti it, I think it's quite a, that's the, that would be the fallacy of false impartiality. I think that's actually, I think being anti it is actually an extremist position.
We may be misrepresenting.
I think you could be neutral on it.
We might be misrepresenting Peter here. So Peter, if you feel you've been misrepresented, feel free to write in at tinyplasticpeople@gmail.com.
Yeah, there's a special filter to direct that straight to junk. Yeah. So please write in.
Excellent. Well, if I move away from the painting table to the wargaming table itself, Rachel, you're talking about, the statefulness of games.
Okay. So I needed a topic. And all I could think of was what is the precise amount of tokens that it is acceptable to have in a tabletop war game? And the number of tokens is itself a function of how sort of stateful the game is, like how many kind of like effects or ongoing processes or like numbers that you need to keep track of the game has, that you either need or might want a token to keep track of. And I know that I definitely have a limit on how many tokens I find acceptable, particularly if they're going to be like all on the board next to the models and stuff like that. But I'm not sure exactly what that limit is. And I seem to accept it in some places and have difficulty with it in others.
See, this was going to be my split. Because when I first read your notes in the sort of show notes, that I'd read it as tokens on the table. And I was like, yes, tokens on the table are awful. And the right number would be zero is what I would have said, except that I do play Gene Stealer Cults occasionally. And I don't mind their single big fat tokens they get to put down. They're kind of okay. But on the table, yeah, I hate tokens. Unless they're sort of, you know, diegetic. Diegetic tokens, I think I'd argue, is a different thing.
What does diegetic mean?
Explain what you mean by that. I think I know what it means, but
I mean, so traditionally it's in sort of film discussion where it's music coming from within the film itself. So, you know, the radio playing inside a scene rather than music played over the top. But in this case, you know, it's if your markers were applied by something that already exists in the world. So in a kind of 40K example, if you've got a recon sweep or whatever, then you represent that with a servo skull model or something. You could have things in a game that were,
I see, like in-game representations of
yes tokens. Or you know, you've got, you know, one shot missiles on your vehicles, and if you magnetize the missiles, you just take them off. You don't need a counter to keep track of it. That I prefer, because you know, and this is because I'm a big wanksy artisty person when it comes to my war games, is I want the table to look as real as possible and things, and you know, I want it to look exciting and visually appealing. And a bunch of little cardboard squares following my models around is detrimental to that. But then I think off the table, I'm quite token tolerant. If it's on a sort of sideboard, and I mean, I play Titanicus, which is in half the game is moving little tokens around on scales. I mean, and that's the bit I like, because as well as being a big wanky artist, I'm also an engineery type person, and moving things on scales is pleasing to me.
That is right. That is exactly your jam. That's make an interesting point about them being diegetic. I think it's quite a good word. I think the correct number is the number that are used in Kill Team.
Really?
Personally.
Because I've seen photographs of Kill Team being played, and every single guy, no matter like whether they're
they all have tokens. You've got to have a token.
Like everyone just has a little token next to them.
I mean,
I hate it.
You hate that? Okay, well, I think in terms of like statefulness, I think it's very, because everybody's either one or the other, Oh shit! Maybe there's okay. Right. So there's a little side token. There's another game called Star Wars Armada, and in that, which is about big fleet Star Wars space combat, and you have tiny little fighters in it, right? And they're not the same as the capital ships, but what they have is the Fantasy Flight Games made this like they have a flight stand, a bit like the GW ones. Mm. But they have a slider on the bottom that slides from one side to the other and it pokes out the side. So the base itself is like a little cardboard space vignette scene. And there's a little slider that pokes out the side, either red or blue, and that tracks their state. And I guess if you could do the same for Kill Team, that would be extremely rad. But it would make all your bases
interrupt
big.
And say that I've just finished proofing a Kill Team article, which is celebrating Kill Team this afternoon. And even in this article that is singing the praises of Kill Team, it does apologise for the number of tokens that you need to use.
I guess. I don't know. I quite like the number. I think it makes the game quite clear in its state.
Yeah.
Because they're like different colours. Like, you can look at it and get a pretty good idea quick.
If you didn't have those tokens there, then the game would be completely unplayable, right? Because all of the state that is like absolutely fundamental to how the game plays would just not be obvious. And you wouldn't be able to keep track of it because every single guy needs to be needs to have this state assigned to them.
Slightly apropos of nothing, I think the other thing I think is if you have is the statefulness. I think there's other things to do with the statefulness of the game, right? Well, in what state the board is on, because just thinking about 40k, you can't represent the number of stratagems that you can possibly have is like 50 per army that can be triggered, and actually only a subset of them can be triggered at any one time, and those don't each have their own token, but the state of the board doesn't represent that full possibility space in terms of the states it could move to and between with the tokens. Would it be benefited by laying all of those out? Probably not. Is that just a failing of having too many stratagems? Probably.
I do like strats.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I do agree. I'll, rather than specifically talk about strats, I'll offer an alternative that I was recently shown a game called Saga, which is an Olden Daisy, not super historical Olden Daisy game, but it's the sort of, it hangs its coat on the sort of historical hook. And the way it's played is that you have a different player sheet, A4 sheet, for each faction, and you apply dice to those effectively abilities before your turn starts. So everything in there is on one sheet of paper, and you know, you have it there, you know what yours is, you know what your opponent's is, well, to some degree you know what your opponent's is. And one of the things that was super appealing about that is that it does have this really defined statefulness that you're never going to have anything that isn't just on this sheet.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of a bit like Warcry. Like you have your warband's abilities. They fit on one card. I know there are a few exceptions, but generally you've got like 5 or 6, let's say up to 10 total things that could go on. So there's a bunch of different things you could go with there, but you can see your opponent's wild dice.
Yeah.
You can see the things they might do with them. And that's kind of like an off-board token, but it's quite readable. I mean, that's quite
the
good.
The counterpoint to obviously all of this is like Necromunda, which has a billion tokens. And it's also got really random rules that it's just like, oh, you want to know this during the game? Well, go fuck yourself. We've hidden it in a rule book. It's like, oh, you're shooting at someone. Well, is it in the shooting rules? Or is it in the movement rules because they need to move after they've been shot? Or is it in the weapon rules? Or maybe it's in a subcategory of the weapon rules. Enjoy looking it up.
Weapon rules referring you to setting up the game rules, which refer you to falling off buildings. Rules.
And it's horrific. And is the point that is too far? I mean, Necromunda probably has too many tokens if you manage to play a worst case game where everyone has gone out to try and, you know,
have as many guns that cause radiation sickness, that also set you on fire, that another person then also, you know, was a bit you crazy, another one would make you fall asleep, and then the last one is doing psychic powers that mean you have to do something else. Oh, and you also have to track how much ammunition all those guns have got, and you're like, yeah, that's too many tokens.
Maybe that's too many tokens. I do wonder, Rachel, what were the games you had in mind when you were thinking about tokens and the state that they represent of games?
Well, probably Warcry is in there because it's just what I've been playing recently. So the state that I can think of in Warcry is, so obviously you've got like the positions of the guys on the board. That is one example of state, but that's like you can't not have that in the game. Otherwise there's like no game, basically.
That's what the game is built around.
Yes. And everything else.
Can't cut that one.
Everything else around that is like the extra stuff. So each you need to keep track of how many wounds each fighter has suffered. You need to keep track of how many actions they performed in the current round. So wounds and actions, those are like two different kinds of counters. I mean, yeah, counters, tokens, whatever that you need. And there's a few other things that can generate like state that goes on the board. And then to the side, you've got at the beginning of the round, you're going to roll your ability, your power dice or whatever they're called. Yeah.
Wild dice?
No, because the wild dice is the one that you get to add in to like modify one of your sets.
Yeah.
So you've got that. But I think what's sort of nice about it is that everything apart from the wounds gets reset at the beginning of each round of play. And from that point on, you're adding more action counters to models as they do stuff throughout the round, you're also using your ability dice. So you're taking the ability dice stays away at the same time as you're adding more state to keep track of what actions they performed. And that makes me think that maybe the thing that makes sort of statefulness in games tolerable for me is if like one, things get sort of reset regularly, and two, each time, like as you're adding more things to keep track of, you're also taking them away, other things away.
You're keeping some constant level of counters, or not some constant, but some level that is, you know, at least balanced across the game, not just building up to counter overload. I wonder, there's games like, isn't there some World War II games, and there's Star Wars Legion, I think it is, where you pick orders out of a bag and stuff.
That's the bolt action system, but it's not specifically orders. It's who you get to activate. Right? I think in bolt action, it's just your, whether it's yours or the enemy's. In Star Wars Legion, it's like elites, Boba Fett's, and furry carpet monster type things or whatever.
Boba Fett's.
Boba Fett's, Glup Shitters, and teddy bears. I was thinking like if you had a game where the sum total of orders was a limited resource, and if there was a limited number of counters that could be in the game, and then
I could talk to you about Chain of Command again, which is why, but I'm not going.
I did do that in Chain of Command. Do you have like order tokens that you then assign? Because that's quite a nice...
I think it's different, and it's probably also off topic, but I'll happily show you at the next meetup. I'll bring Chain of Command and I'll show you how it works, and then somebody will have played Chain of Command with me.
What's the two sentence relevance to tokens?
That you have got limited orders, but you don't gain conditions very much. You gain very limited tokens on the board, but you do have dice rolls are your tokens for how you assign orders, and it becomes quite dynamic based on that. It's a sort of historicals game, which is problematic for me. I wish it wasn't. I wish it had like a nice fantasy version. But yeah, as anyone who's interested in game design, it's a really interesting rule set. The way it applies.
Quite interesting.
You know, it does things with how games, you know, how models interact and how much you command and control you've got is the kind of key part of the game, more so than just, you know, what you're telling things to do. It's, you know, whether you're able to or not. And I do think, you know, counters are definitely doing something in a game, which is adding complexity and adding crunch, if I dare use the word, because I know it's a contentious word. Hmm. But
turning on the klaxon.
Yeah, the crunch klaxon. And not speaking about podcast eCrunch either, who is not contentious. He's very lovely. We all like him. But,
well,
like him-ish. Tolerate, okay.
Also, that's,
yeah, that's not what I meant, but sure, yikes.
Crunch, if you feel you've been slandered in this episode, please write in to thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com.
Hey, guess what? We've got a second rule set up.
So yes, you know, I mean, counters are adding that kind of complexity. And it's, you know, it's the base level, you don't need any complexity, you need counters for us because models are alive or dead and, you know, they go off the table. So that, you know, the first one you gain is that any model that has multiple wounds or multiple degrees of how alive it can be is always going to have something that indicates that.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. That sounds quite interesting.
Mm. I'll check it out. Although it might be difficult to get over the thing about historical and World War II games in particular that just put me to sleep.
I've got two armies that I've painted in non-historical colours and given like Games Workshop transfers and things instead of the war transfers.
Yeah, just call them Free Guild handgunners.
Oh yeah, okay.
And steam tanks.
Yeah.
Then you're in. Nice. Drew, you were talking about you were wanting to talk about hobby discipline.
Yes.
Ooh.
I don't have any, so tell me about it. I've never heard of it, mate. Of
course, I don't want to say discipline and get people excited. Because I mentioned to someone the other day that I was a discipline lead now at work, and they imagined that I was some kind of person exacting capital punishment or corporal punishment on people.
Coming to my
not
just got to like break out a whip
or indeed whip based things. So yeah, so discipline in an organization really when it comes to hobby, and I discovered that I was just like, you know, I paint to relax, and I, you know, as well as much as I do paint to get things on the table, but I was starting to feel really sort of unsatisfied, and obviously I am working towards a target with an event coming up, but I was just basically chipping away on loads of stuff. And because I had so much on the go, I wasn't finishing anything, and I didn't really have any sense of, you know, completion, any sense of achievement. And, you know, this weekend gone, I just was like, right, I'm only going to, and this was actually the things that I repainted. It's like, I'm going to prime them Friday night, and then I'm going to spend the weekend repainting them. That is my target, and I will be, you know, happy on Sunday night if I've done that, and I'm not going to get distracted doing something else, you know, that's also on my desk, and I will just focus on this. And you know, and that did deliver, you know, much more satisfaction for me. So yeah, I suppose that's the question. I'm painting for enjoyment, but how do I maximize that enjoyment? Do you guys have any
maximized hobby games?
Do you sort of consider that? Is that even a thing for you, or, you know, have you never noticed?
Kind of like it's the classic one of paint. If I have something to paint for, then I don't necessarily derive satisfaction in necessarily finishing. Like, especially. So maybe Chaos Marines are a nice example. Like, if I've got a thing, I will paint them up. I'll paint up the next lot of Chaos Space Marines I have for the next game. Sometimes I enjoy that process. Sometimes I don't, and the satisfaction comes in being able to take them painted rather than in the painting, if you know what I mean. The satisfaction comes at the end rather than the doing. But there's also things, if I just... I don't know, because I'm not playing a huge number of games at the moment, and I haven't got a huge number like of events. I haven't got any events like lined up. Then I'm also able to just flip between them. I keep things in different boxes, and I will literally just look at the box and be like, "What do I want to do?" And I want to paint a Space Marine today. or I want to paint a lizard. I haven't wanted to paint a lizard in a good while, but that's fine. I've got a box full of them. And when the mood takes me, I will take one of them and paint him. Or I'll take one of my mentors and spend far too long on a single mentor.
These are the guys and who look like that, Buzz Lightyear, right?
Yeah, these are the Buzz Lightyear Marines. And I'll just spend grossly far too much time on one Space Marine and then not pick them up for
another. It sounds like you are quite focused when it comes to your... Whatever's in front of you stays in front of you.
Yeah. Well...
Yeah.
Yes, that is true. That is true. I don't particularly like to half do something and put it away.
But that
I have done. I do that. I do that a lot on big models. I do that a lot. But on smaller ones, I like to have them out and finish them.
Like that, you're like, you don't like to leave something half finished. But the trick is to make sure that the something is something reasonably self-contained and small, right?
Yes.
So it's like one guy or a unit. Or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. A defined squad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I couldn't have like a whole army like laid out on my table and like skip between units to finish them off. Like I can't.
Yeah,
when I was repainting stuff, I have like 30 odd cultists and I took them in batches of 10. I did them in batches of 10 and I would not skip between them and decide actually halfway through I can't be asked to finish this. I'd be like, no, I'm going to push through. I'm going to push through and finish these 10.
I'm really glad.
And so I was finding it
broken. Because otherwise you would see behind me on the table a literal line of half-done tanks in various stages.
Yeah. I am guilty of doing it. Like, I have plenty of half-finished things. And the trick is restarting them. But I'm hoping I've broken the back of that, considering what we went over earlier and going back to stuff. I'm hoping I can do that with some of my half-finished things. But that tends to be bigger stuff. Like, again, it's tanks. Like, I've got two half-finished tanks. I've got a half-finished giant lizard. I've got a half-finished frogman. I've got all of my unfinished terrain. The big bits. Big bits is where I really struggle. But small guys, if I've got one guy I can pour a huge amount of effort into, either the mentors or a unit of Chaos Marines, those are my achievable bite-sized, organized levels of hobby, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I just, if I leave stuff half finished, it just kind of hangs over me and it just permanently occupies like 25% of my brain just the whole time.
Regardless of the size of the model, it's like a gas. It just expands to fill 25% of your brain.
So like if I start something, then... If I'm adding more things to the list of things that I'm currently working on, then I'm just like multiplying that kind of big mental overhead. And this is actually like, I don't know, it's obviously like a lot of sort of psychology and productivity tips and tricks, probably a little bit not 100% truthful, but apparently you're supposed to, like, the normal human brain can only handle like one project or maybe two projects at a time, and like if one of those projects is like your non-hobby life, right, so like your work stuff, your chores and stuff, and then and that leaves you only room for like one hobby project at a time, that definitely seems to be true for me. I can only do the one thing. So I focus on that one thing. I only have a big Trello board full of like projects. All of them are like reasonably small. But there's only ever one thing in the like currently doing column.
This explains a lot of my brain post 30, I think. Just one thing at a time.
Yeah.
So you actually organize yourself to have only one thing on the go then? And a sort of a disciplined list behind that too.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if it's really a discipline thing. It's more just like, well, I'm doing like, well, I'm like, I simply do not have brain room for like starting another thing until like at the moment I've been painting this Warcry terrain for a couple of weeks or so, and like if I started trying to paint something else while this was like not done, then I wouldn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So
I
have no incentive to do that.
Do you let stuff slide back? Do you let it sort of slide back from the projects to half finished?
Sometimes, yeah. Like sometimes if I'm like, okay, I'm really not getting on with this at the moment and I'd like to do something else, then yeah, I will like take it out of the doing column, put it back in its original place and cycle back around to it at some point in the future. But like, that's very rare. I think I like to get it into the into the sort of finished column, even if I'm not 100% satisfied with it, or if I'm kind of like hating the final push to get it done. Yeah,
I think one thing I'm quite lucky is that if I do dump something, then I'm quite comfortable not being distracted by it. Like, I don't like to leave something half finished, but if I'm quite capable of sort of saying, well, I'm not going to finish it, so I'm going to put it away, and not, that doesn't tend to hang over me. But I don't like to do it to begin with, if you know what I mean. I can put it away in a box.
Yeah, I don't have that. I have, so like, there's like only a few things that I have like quit doing halfway through and put them in a box. And like, I genuinely do think about them like at least once a day. It sucks.
What are those?
So there's a box, there's a little Tupperware box containing 6, maybe 8, I'm not sure what number, of Lizard Men Cold One Nights, because they're so bad. They're just horrible models. And I think I was quite early on in my like hobby journey at that point, and I was trying to paint them in like sub assemblies, but not just like one part the rider and one part the beast. Just like I was painting the arms separately and stuff like that. So no wonder I was just hating it.
Yeah.
But one day I'll do them justice. I'll get them out of the box. I think I also I started turning it into a project to learn how to like magnetize arms and stuff like that.
Right.
Because I guess it's a good idea to do that on models that you're not particularly fond of.
It might not surprise you that I have exactly the same thing. I can look right now and pinpoint my box of Saurus Knights.
Oh.
Which are in exactly
really
the same
exactly
thing.
Exactly the same thing. So.
Not sub-assembled arms, but right. They are bodies, legs, and lizards, and they are
and 10% every so painted. Often you get them out of the box to look at them and see if you can do them as your next project. But yeah, then you look like, at well, then you look at the cold there. Ones and it's going like no at you you just can't.
I went to great lengths to change the cold ones.
Oh, really?
So they're sort of So you know the only way I can describe them is like the late 90s Godzilla ones. They've got that kind of square looking head that's quite low.
Yeah, they're
so
they're
I changed them out for
all
of those.
Right?
Oh, it's the
almost then. Almost. The claws aren't quite touching the ground, but they are as if they're walking on all fours. They might as well just be as goofy as the new ones. They're not great, to be honest. I don't know where I went to all their
I think they're better than the new ones. They're the ones that Dark Elves used to have. Aren't they the same model?
Yeah, they are, yeah. But they're not as good as the ones the Dark Elves now have, which are better than the cold ones that the Lizard Men have, which are awful. Sorry, Sculptor, but I'm not going to take that back. They're quite bad. just like, what are they about? Yeah, I put them in a box, and I hope they don't come to life when I'm not watching and sort of cry like why when I'm not looking. But I don't honestly like it's. I don't know what they expect.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Pixar Hams movie where they all come to life would be a.
Yeah, no, they're ones that needs taking that back and. Airbrushing in the back of the head, I think.
If you airbrush them enough, they just become a ball of paint. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, like pearls, right? Like you, like a piece of unwanted grit that you just repeatedly paint until they become something beautiful.
They just become an orb, and then you drop them on the ground and they roll down the hill.
I feel now you should
just the
full pearl analogy. You should just bury them in the middle of a sculpted, really impressively sculpted, you know,
Yeah.
Each
one goes inside its own little Seraphon.
Well, I was thinking, do you get the big dinosaur? Seraphon still. It used to be like a really big T-Rex.
The Dreadsaurian.
I don't think sell it anymore. Well, I think they got rid of
the Dreadsaurian, I'm pretty sure.
That's the challenge for both of you two, which is to super glue all your Saurus Knights together into a skeleton of a Dreadsaurian and then sculpt a Dreadsaurian over the top. And only you would know that in its core was a 10 different little derpy dudes.
Yeah, formed of beautiful pearls into a giant Dreadsaurian. Formed of gritty, cold ones.
Gritty, ugly, cold ones. I feel that what I really should be doing is just taking notes here as well. Because apart from the Saurus Knights that, you know, deserve to live in a box. I lack the discipline that you two have to focus on projects.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's like, in my case, it's not discipline. It's like, I just have to do it.
Just coincidence.
Maybe it's order more than discipline.
Yeah, I mean, I have like a... You talk about your box of projects. I mean, I've got like a wall of half-done projects, like a literal floor-to-ceiling shelf of projects that are all WIPs. And I've decided for whatever reason that I no longer like. And
yeah, that sounds like a worst-case scenario for me. Like that 25% like mental occupancy would just be like 95%.
You forget... Forget to breathe.
Yeah.
I'm not going to defend it by saying it's a good idea. I think it's almost certainly a terrible idea. And that, you know, my hobby life, like much of my life, is like a dumpster on fire rolling down a hill. And, you know, it's...
I mean, I'm looking at 5 9-litre rubs each full of half-finished projects.
And because it's you, they're all just like stacked on top of each other, right? It's like a model density. Pure plastic the whole way through.
I could pretend my webcam is off. I could say to you, no, Richard, they are well organized, but you know, I'd be lying.
Mm-hmm. When you pick them up and shake them, they don't even rattle because it's just jammed in there so tight.
It's like, yeah, this is what we call sedentary plastic, if you just leave it. Yeah, it's just formed into a plastic amalgamation that you can build houses out of.
Well, I suppose if my shelves start collapsing, it will start to become a sociological process, so they just compress each other down until the base layer becomes, I don't know, coal seams or whatever.
Geological plastic.
Warhammer is healing. It's returning to nature.
Somebody will mine it in the future and burn it all. Yeah. It'll be a valuable resource.
Okay. Well, I think that's probably us done for today in that case.
I
don't think we solved your problem.
No. I think the problem is might be me. Because I know that Rachel likes to keep her hobby desk sort of spotlessly tidy as well. And I have been trying to intimidate this. No, it intimidates me.
We're trying to intimidate.
Rachel.
Intimidate. Well,
been intimidated instead. That I sort of, the best I can manage to do is put all my paints away and then immediately get them out again because I need them. But I do periodically. Mm. As my like painting area gets smaller and smaller, and when it's like basically just, it's like 6 inches so that my hands can fit in, I'm like, and... Yeah, but I've got a full, 6 foot desk, and part of it's like, you know, spray cubicle and things. But yeah, it's just joy. I'm again glad the webcam's not on. I keep trying and I'm failing to kind of maintain any semblance of order. And a lot of these things are just like half done models balanced on top of other half done models. Because that's why tanks are good, is you can stack them into like a big half finished ziggurat. And
yes. Yeah, nice. Well, I think that the important thing is, as long as you're not distressed by how you organise your own hobby, right?
I think that's Like I say, I did realise this weekend that I was just failing at like to do anything. Well, and moving everything forward by 1% was not satisfaction.
I suppose the other thing, if you're brutally ruthless about what you... I've been getting rid of lots of stuff recently in preparation for moving house. I'm just like, like this, but am I ever going to paint it? I'm really not.
Oh, no,
just going to get rid of it.
I have acquired and painted of 2 of those things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm just, you know, I liked both of those things. Am I really going to do anything with them? No, I'm not. I'm just
what,
not.
What gonna, you need to so do to is do Ink 28 stuff, and then you never have a reason to get rid of anything because you're like, oh, I might need to use this as a basis of conversion.
I have a lot of stuff still. I think it'll be fine. It's still helping to lighten the burden, but I've still got a big old box full of junk, like an Ink 28.
Fair enough.
Be all right.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank both of you two for joining me today to discuss our various sort of hobby thoughts. I feel it's been
thanks you too.
Condensed podcast where we've all been in agreement. We're not only apart from you two who were just in agreement with each other about how to do hobby stuff, and I was weeping softly in the corner. But beyond that, it's been we've all been leaning in the same direction. So. Easy. Before we depart, if people are interested in seeing what you've been doing, do you exist on the internet anywhere, Tom? Fair enough.
Yeah, I do. I'm on various places at TN Dines.
Rachel, do you exist on the internet?
I do. You can find me on Twitter, where I don't really post that often about hobby, but I really should get back in the habit of doing that. At Nershly, NERSHLY.
Excellent. And I also exist on the internet. It Drew_paints on Instagram and maybe on Twitter, but I can't remember. I don't go onto Twitter ever, so you won't see anything if you go there, anything of interest anyway. Well, if you want to speak to us, as we have hinted, if you want to tell us that we're being too mean to our co-hosts, you can contact us at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. And if you want to read articles and the like, you can go to tinyplasticpeople.com.
We haven't got a filter. We've got a special filter set up for everybody that's not Pete or Rich that doesn't go to the trash. So it is actually worth emailing.
I think we're also on Twitter, right? Tiny Plastic Pals.
Oh, we are. Yeah, I don't know that because I don't handle that side of things. Yes, where we talk to. I was going to say the kids, but we don't talk to kids on Twitter. We talk to 30-year-olds on Twitter, I believe. And then I don't know. We don't have a TikTok, so
there's also Discord. You could also come to discord.gg/role models and join a cool bunch of people. If you also like losing at Warhammer 40k and agreeing with everybody furiously. like this podcast, then join us there.
Yeah,
excellent. Well, I hope it's been an interesting listen. If you want to hear potentially more focused competitive chat, you can also listen to our sister podcast, which is 3 and 2. No one's corrected me, so I assume it is called 3 and 2. I normally get the numbers wrong.
That's correct.
Which is hosted by the much discussed Rich and two other lovely people who like to talk about Age of Sigmar things in a more coherent way than we talk about the sort of broader scheme of the hobby. And yes, like I say, we have a lot of articles online at tinyplasticpeople.com. Well, thank you everyone. Thanks for joining us, and thank you too for speaking. Cheerio, everybody.
No problemo.
Thanks for listening.